Chapter 50. Joe and Priya were taken to a compartment on the middle level of the aircraft and locked inside. Both of them had their hands zip-tied, and Joe's legs were also bound, but he didn't think that would hold them long.
"I'm sorry," Priya said. "I shouldn't have left the yacht. I shouldn't have tried to place the geo-tracker on the plane. I was trying to help. Thought it'd be good to take some initiative."
She paused.
"And I was feeling left out."
"I wouldn't worry about it," Joe said.
"Disobeying orders is kind of a thing at Numa. You'll probably get a promotion out of it once we get back."
Priya smiled, but it quickly disappeared into a frown.
"If we get back. This is a nightmare."
Joe pretended to be hurt. "That's the first time a woman has ever said that about spending time alone with me."
"You know what I mean," she said.
"Trust me. Things are looking up," Joe said. "Tessa doesn't know it, but she gave up some vital information. To begin with, Kurt's alive, something I've been wondering about since we were separated on that ship of hers. More importantly, Kurt is doing what he always does, making life miserable for his opponent. I have no idea what that submarine could possibly have to do with all of this, but Tessa's face went white when you said the name."
"But I feel like a traitor giving them that information."
"You give something to get something," Joe said. "You just logged in with my ID. Tessa seems like an obsessive-compulsive type. Now that she has access, she'll probably find it hard to resist using it again and again. Eventually, someone will notice that a dead guy is checking his email. That will tell Kurt and Rudy that she has us. Just might lead to them sending help, assuming they can find us. But if she has access, she doesn't need us anymore."
"She can't know when they're going to cut her off," Joe said. "That should keep us alive for a while. Long enough to get out of here. Trust me, this place won't hold us long."
"How can you be so confident?"
"Because Tessa isn't much of a warden," Joe said. "She's a businesswoman. Obviously a brutal one at that, but she's not equipped to keep us here."
"We're tied up in a locked compartment," Priya said.
"These zip ties won't hold us," Joe said. "Not once I find something even moderately rough to use on them."
"And the door?"
"This is an airplane," Joe replied, "not Leavenworth. It's designed to be lightweight and flexible. The skin and the ribs of the plane are strong. Everything else is paper thin. We could break that door down with one strong charge if we wanted to. The problem is the armed guards on the other side."
"You're quite the optimist," she said, "especially since it's me you're stuck with and not Kurt. I can't exactly make a run for it, you know. And I can't help you fight them, unless you want me to trip someone or bite their ankles."
"Tripping works," Joe said. "Ankle biting, not so much. It'll probably just ruin that beautiful smile of yours."
The smile came out.
"You should probably make a break for it on your own. I could at least distract them."
Joe shook his head. "There are no circumstances under which I leave you here, so you might as well let that thought go right now. As for escaping, we don't have to walk out of here. This plane is filled with submersibles, jet skis, boats. My plan has us riding to freedom in style."
"You already have a plan?"
Joe nodded. "Multi-step, with different contingencies. Very organized. Unlike that fly-by-night stuff Kurt comes up with."
Priya smiled.
"Tell me more."
"It starts with the guards," Joe said. "We have to get rid of them."
"How?"
"We use what we have around us," Joe said.
"We have nothing around us. This compartment is empty."
"We have light," Joe said. "Light means electricity. Electricity means wires.
Would it surprise you to know that most aircraft have several miles of wiring running through the fuselage?"
"It wouldn't," she said. "I worked on a computer program for Airbus when I was in college. All powered systems were fly-by-wire. There were circuits running everywhere."
Joe nodded. "This plane also has cranes, ramps, powered flooring to move cargo pallets around. All of it powered electrically from the fuel cells."
Priya looked around.
"I don't see any wires."
Joe reached over and wrapped his knuckles on a sloped footer at the edge of the wall.
The impact made a hollow sound. It's because they're hidden, though they need to be somewhere they can be easily accessed. Priya was grinning now. She could see his plan. We have a few hours until dinner, Joe said. I might as well get to work. Having placed two men outside the compartment to guard her captives, Tessa met with her two trusted subordinates. Despite everything we've done, Austin and Numa are rapidly putting the puzzle together. I want him eliminated. Woods spoke up. We could talk to... Tessa cut him off. I'm not using any more of your local friends. Austin and his group are beyond their ability to deal with. She turned to Volk. He almost killed you down on the LNG carrier. That should motivate you. Who can we reach out to? Who among your illegitimate friends can we use to get rid of Austin once and for all? I have an old acquaintance who could do it for us, Volk said. He and his people leave nothing but bodies behind when they act. Paramilitary? Volk nodded. Do they have the equipment necessary to get at Austin out in the middle of the Mediterranean? His last operation was flying weapons from Albania to rebels across the mountains, in long-range ex-Russian helicopters. Tessa didn't like the idea of involving more outsiders, but she was approaching a critical point. A meeting with Arat Buran and his consortium was set for the next morning. She needed Volk and Woods with her when it happened. Hire them, she said. Offer more than they ask for, but make it clear to them that half measures will not get them paid. I want Austin dead. I want his friends and colleagues dead. I want his ship at the bottom of the sea resting beside the Dakar. Volk nodded. I'll take care of it. The guards placed outside of Joe and Priya's compartment grew bored and restless long before the dinner hour came. They'd sat and talked, made crude jokes, played cards, and even taken turns napping. Eventually, they got hungry. Call Woods, one said to the other. Tell him to relieve us or send down some food. If he hasn't eaten everything in the galley himself, the other guard joked. A call was placed and a tray of sandwiches was sent down to them. Two of those are for the prisoners, they were told. The men considered eating the prisoners' food themselves, but the bread was coarse and dry and the meat gamey and possibly spoiled. I'm not eating garbage, the first man said. I'll give it to them, the second guard said. Let's hope it doesn't make them sick. He walked across the floor of the aircraft and banged on the door. Step back, he ordered. We have food for you. Muffled noises that sounded like shuffling could be heard, and the guard considered that to be compliance. He unlocked the door, put the key back in his pocket, and grabbed the handle. Sparks exploded from the aluminum handle the instant he touched it. The guard was thrown across the fuselage, hurling the tray up in the air as he went. He landed on his back with smoke wafting from his hand and the scent of burned skin filling the cabin. The lights dimmed, and the sandwich tray clattered to the floor. The second guard was so surprised that he failed to see Joe charging through the now open door. By the time he looked up, Joe's fist was hurtling toward his face. The impact snapped his head to the side and put him out cold. Joe enjoyed throwing a good punch, and he felt that was one of his best. He dragged the guards back into the compartment, passing Priya, who remained crouched by the door with the leads of two long wires in her hands. That was shocking, she said, grinning and suspending the wires separately where they wouldn't touch the floor, the wall, or each other. Joe laughed. It was dark on the lower deck now, with only the emergency lighting coming on. I think we tripped a breaker. That could be good or bad. Let's not wait around to find out. He crouched down next to her. Climb on. This is no time to be shy. She wrapped her arms around his neck and pulled herself up. Standing, Joe grabbed her legs, held them tight, and ducked out into the main section of the fuselage. He moved toward the ladder, finding Priya easy to carry. Her arms were strong, and she held on to Joe's neck and shoulders without any problem, even as he descended a ladder to the lowest deck on the aircraft. So far, so good, he said. Now to get the aft door open. Weaving around a Ferrari and Mercedes SUV, Joe accidentally bumped Priya's head on an overhanging section of the fuselage. Ouch! Sorry, Joe replied. Took that turn a little wide. Been some time since I had anyone traveling piggyback.
It's all right, she said. Don't slow down. I want to get out of here.
Making their way to the tail, Joe bypassed the tarp-covered cars and stopped beside a fiberglass powerboat. It sat on a pallet connected to a conveyor belt system that allowed Tessa and her crew to move the vehicles and cargo around. Reaching down, he flicked a switch, brought the battery online, and checked the fuel supply. 3/4 of a tank. That should get us away from here.
What about the submersible? Priya said. They can't chase us if we're underwater.
The sub was up in its cradle. Joe shook his head. The crane will be slow and noisy. We need to lower that door and use this conveyor belt to get ourselves out of here ASAP. He gently lowered Priya into the boat and then moved to the controls. The setup was standard, although Joe noticed the writing on the pressure dials had been done in Cyrillic. Apparently, Tessa had built her plane from Russian parts. He pressed a button to power up the system, turned the handle to unlock the door, and waited for the light on the panel to go green. As soon as it did, he moved the door handle from up to down. The hydraulic pumps kicked in, and a crack of light appeared around the edge of the ramp. As the ramp dropped, wind began whistling over the top, bringing a swirl of dust and an odd scent with it.
Something's not right, Joe said.
The ramp was only 1/4 of the way down when the power was cut from somewhere else in the plane.
They're onto us, Priya said.
No problem, Joe said. I have a contingency for that.
He pulled the emergency release handle. The hydraulic pressure vanished, and the ramp, which weighed several thousand pounds, fell hard and locked itself into a full open position. Instead of a large splash, it hit with nothing but a solid thud, which raised an additional cloud of dust. Joe stared out the back. He'd assumed they were on water. The Monarch was designed to operate on water. But all he could see behind them were acres of bone-white desert and a cloud of swirling dust.